Hey, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Trisha, and this is Trying to Win.
This is our podcast about being trial lawyers, both in and outside the courtroom.
Well, and this one is actually about being females, female trial lawyers, and talking about those experiences that we've had. But gosh, it's changed a lot, but a lot of things are still the same, aren't they?
Yeah, I think a lot of things are still the same. It definitely has, changed quite a bit since we first started. And I don't know, I hate to jump right in, but I hadn't even thought about this as we were getting ready for this episode. But I do remember having a case that was set for trial. I was pregnant with my first child. I was due to have her in May. And we had a case that had been set for trial. And I called the lawyer on the other side and said, hey, my due date is in May. We're going to have to move the trial. And he said, no. And I was like, what do you mean no? Like, I can't try the case in May. I'm going to have a baby. Like, 9 months is coming to an end, and we're going to get there one way or the other, and it's going to be right about then. So
right,
we can't do it. And he said no. And so I actually had to file a motion to continue the trial on the grounds that I was pregnant and I was due to have my child in May. And he got to the courtroom and he opposed this. So we show up to argue my motion to continue on the grounds that I'm pregnant. And I have a due date. And the lawyer on the other side literally stood up and said to the judge, she should have been thinking about this case when she was getting herself knocked up.
That's amazing.
Seriously.
The judge probably was mad.
Now, listen, was just in the last. So that child is now 20. She'll be 23 in a few months. That was just in the last 23 years. I mean, it's incredible.
It still happens. Oh, it happened to me the other day. I was going to meet with a client, a doctor at a practice, and I walked to the front desk. And this was another woman, right? And she said, drug reps need to sign in over there. And I had two feelings. First of all, I was really flattered because drug reps are usually hot. But second of all, I thought to myself, wow, you know, even as women, we make assumptions, you know? And so I think this is a good segue to talk about sort of the Lincoln Durr and, you know, the values that we have in terms of trying to promote women and minorities and the way that, you know, our mission and how we kind of viewed that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I do think it's funny when we first left the big firm that we were with to start Lincoln Durr 11 years ago, we didn't leave that big firm with the intention of being an all female law firm forever. We left that law firm with the intention to start a kick-ass firm of people who try cases.
We left that firm so that we could rise to the top on our own. We needed to know, not can I carry someone else's bag, but can I do this in and of myself? And I felt very suffocated in that big environment. And there's nothing wrong with it. That's each to their own. But for me, I felt very suffocated by the people that were senior to me. And I needed to use my own wings and see if I could fly or not. And I knew that, you know, I was either going to be a failure or it was going to go great. But, you know, honestly, I didn't ever think that failure was going to be on the table.
It really wasn't an option.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, so I think the vision, though, in my mind, and my mind's eye was finding a place where people are supported and lifted and given the ability to succeed or fail, right? Because they're both learning opportunities on their own. And to find a way to cultivate, is that the right word? Cultivate women, minorities, any of our attorneys in a way that they find their own passionate place.
So
they
get to
you be you kind of a thing, right?
Yeah.
And part of that was to be super inclusive. And, you know, I remember, and how awesome was this? We had a lot of experiences where people would, at the very beginning when we were largely female, not on purpose, it just kind of the way.
As we say, we hired every qualified man who came in to interview with us.
That's exactly what we said. And then we finally got Scott. Scott joined us and it was great. And we would laugh and say, you know, well, he's got his own bathroom, right? but anyway, we would have clients come through and say things to us like, when are you going to hire a white dude? Like, where's your diversity? And it was just so shocking to us. But then so refreshingly different to even be approached in that manner, right? I mean, there really wasn't, we were very, some family law firms are largely female, but in our space, we're really
unique.
Yeah, extremely. Mm-hmm. And so that's cool. And we want to carry that torch forward in a way to promote all of our attorneys and, you know, and other women, and whether they work with us or not, and minorities.
And I don't know if you remember the reputation that we had when we first started. And what they were calling us around.
Oh, they called us a name.
And let's say the entire state of North Carolina, we were the estrogen law firm, which, you know, I think one of the things that I would like at the end of this segment for people to take away, and particularly for women to take away from this, is don't get mad about that. Wear that as a badge of honor.
Oh, like, yeah. It can
they
help
don't
you.
Like what you're doing. Yeah. They don't like right. what they're seeing. They realize that you are a right. threat to them right. and take that and internalize it and use it as your power. Because it really, to me, as insulting as it might have been, to me, it really
it's
was
a joke.
More of a,
you watch
wow,
this. You watch this.
They're scared of me, and now yeah. I'm going to show them why they
yeah.
should be.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, so many ways. Life in general is just a expansion of what happens in the junior high schools, right? If you're talking about us, I'm happy because there's a reason, you mm-hmm. know? We've got your attention. And if you're calling us names, why are you calling us names? Is it because you're jealous? Is it because we're that good? Or, you know, what is it?
What are you afraid of?
Right, yeah. right. I mean, honestly, one could argue that even though that type of attention wasn't welcomed, it was almost flattering in a way that they're talking about us, you know?
Yeah, and not entirely unexpected given our experiences, right?
No,
like,
not
you
at
know,
all.
Unfortunately, you got called the drug rep. We all female lawyers walking into a deposition, particularly if you've done litigation for a really long time, you'll remember what we used to call lit bags, which were big black briefcases
yeah,
on
the
wheels.
Hard ones.
Yeah, the hard ones that you would drag behind you in and out of the courtroom or in and out of depositions. And remarkably, the other person who would inevitably be dragging a big black bag with them is the court reporter. And so, you know, even though your male colleagues had the same big black bag that they were dragging behind them, we were the ones who, when we walked in, got asked if we were the court reporter
right,
for the
right,
day,
right?
Right. It's not unusual. And to this day, I get asked that question when I walk into a deposition and yeah. I'm dragging a big black bag. Oh, are you the court reporter?
Right, right.
Not today.
But you
I'm
were
not.
Talking about how you wear that as a badge of honor. So do you think that when the other side thinks that you're the court reporter when you're walking in the courtroom, do you think that that is also a badge of honor? Or is that a strategy? Is that a benefit in any way?
Wow, that's a great question. I know you get paid to ask those, but
you get paid to answer them.
So I think for some men who do that, it's a strategy. They want to try and throw you off your game, which is why it's really important, I think, for women to not let that derail them from their purpose walking into the room. You cannot let that derail you as being a huge insult to you personally.
If you let them, they will, right?
Right,
if
and
you
don't
let
know.
Them, they will, but it's your choice to let them throw you off your game or not, right?
And you don't know if it's an intentional, oh, they know I'm not the court reporter, they're just saying that,
right.
you know, and that makes you mad. Or you don't know if it's just an implicit bias that they have, which also just makes you mad. But,
right?
I mean, you don't know what the purpose for it is, but you definitely should not let that knock you off your game.
Right.
You know, you have a job to do, and you feeling like you're being insulted or treated differently should not change the way that you approach the case or the deposition or whatever it
right.
is that you have in front of you. I will never forget one of the first times I went to court in North Carolina was for what we used to call calendar call.
Mm-hmm.
They did calendar calls in all the
That's
counties.
Where we met.
Yeah, we met in a calendar call, and all the lawyers who had cases on the trial calendar or motions calendar for that week come into the courtroom on Monday morning at 10, and they call the calendar. And I will never forget this female lawyer who was sitting at counsel table inside the well. She must have had the first case on the calendar, because usually that's who goes and sits inside the well
right.
at calendar call. And the judge who was calling the calendar that day, who I think was 80 when I started and is 140 today, she stood up to introduce herself and the case, and he said, "Step out from around that table and let me see what you have on."
You're kidding me. I've never heard that story.
That's in front of an entire courtroom of mostly male lawyers. There were only a few of us women. All of the male lawyers are of course wearing black, gray, or blue suits, right? And she had on a white suit, top to bottom, white suit, white shoes. Back then, they still wore pantyhose. We don't even wear pantyhose in court anymore. Gasp!
Yeah. The horror.
I know. And if I'm being honest, the suit was a little tight. I'm not going to lie.
Right.
But still,
so inappropriate.
How mortifying for that poor woman. Being the only woman inside the well.
Was he being dirty about it?
No, he was being ugly about it. He didn't think what she had on was appropriate.
Oh.
For the courtroom. And he was making that point for her. I don't think he was being dirty at all. I think he was being a jerk.
Yeah.
God,
that's awful. I mean, you unfortunately, you know, you do see things like that. But when I look at it, we talk a lot when we're doing trial strategy about good facts and bad facts, right? Mm-hmm. And the good lawyers can separate the good facts from the bad facts. The great lawyers can make the bad facts good facts, right?
Yes.
You can turn it around, right? You're ready for it, you turn it around. So
same thing.
The point I'm making is that, yeah, you walk into a courtroom and the opposing counsel looks you up and down or makes an ugly comment or thinks that you're the court reporter. And you've just, if you can... That's power, right? There's power for you in that. It's the power of being underestimated, you know? And there's nothing better in the world than walking into a situation where you're underestimated. So that when you do start talking or stand up in that courtroom and look at the judge and make a great point, the old white man on the other side is like, oh, what? What just happened to me? Yeah, you just got clocked by a woman. I'm sorry. But, you know, I do think that in a way there is a very powerful advantage of underestimation. You know?
Absolutely.
I don't like it, but it can be powerful. It's a bad fact that it can be good.
Yeah. And we enjoyed it for a long time. I think we've gotten to the point in our careers where most of the lawyers that we oppose in our usual jurisdictions anyway, know us and know better now that they can't underestimate us. But certainly I would encourage young lawyers, male, female, whatever, use that. If you are being underestimated, absolutely use that. Do not show your weakness in that moment.
Let
you know?
Them underestimate you and then blow them away.
Yes.
When they realize how wrong they were.
Whatever you can do to avoid showing weakness, you should do. I remember having a young lawyer across the table from me at a deposition, and it was a male lawyer. It wasn't a female lawyer, and he asked a question. And it was a critical question in the case. It was a causation question. So it's, you know, one of those very technical
causation question doctor, being like, did what they did cause the injury?
Can you say to a reasonable degree of medical certainty is the correct way to phrase that question?
Right.
And he had not phrased the question correctly. And so I objected to the form of the question, which is all we're allowed to do in North Carolina. And he looked at me and he goes, "Well, can you tell me the correct form and I'll fix it?" And I was like, I'm not, you're opposing me, right? No, I am not going to tell you how to fix the form of the question. In that moment, he showed weakness to me. Mm-hmm. And it has been 20 years since that deposition. I still remember it. And I remember it every time I have a case with him. Every single time.
That's pretty funny. So I'm going to tell a really vulnerable story, but it's the truth. And it's something that happened to me very young in my career early on. And this is the example of the way to handle a bad situation. So I was maybe my second or third year of practice. And we had a very large client that we did work with. And I went with my senior partner, the old salty dog smoking the cigarette who I talked about in episode one, who is an awesome man and a great teacher and an awesome trial lawyer, and I learned so much from him. Anyway, he and I and another member of our firm went on this trip. it was some sort of a convention, and we were taking out with us some members of this company we represented. And we had a lot of work from this company. They were a very substantial client. And we were out to dinner and hanging out and all that. And at the end of the night, the client, the major decision maker, asked me to come back to his room. This is a true story. I don't know if I've told you this or not. And I said, no, I'm not, no thank you, right? And I was trying, you know, it's very uncomfortable because I knew it was a big client. I'm an associate. It was a lot of pressure. And he was being very flirty and kind of touchy. And it just was so hard for me because I didn't know how to say no, right? And I didn't have the confidence at that age to be able to smack his hand like I would today, like, today. And I'm an associate and I don't want to lose the business. And so he then says, no, I'm asking you to come back to my room with me. And I said, no, I'm really not comfortable doing that. He said, are you comfortable with your job? He said, I can pull all the work from your firm. I think you need to come back with me. And I said, no. And I went back to my hotel room. It chokes me up even thinking about it today because it was so awful. And I cried and I was devastated by it. It was horrible. And here I was like maybe 25, 26 years old. And I wanted to grow the client base. And I was doing work with them too. So it was an opportunity for me to move up. And here I've, said no to him. And the next morning I got up and I went to my boss and I told him what happened. Do you know what that man did? Have I told you this, Sarah?
Sent all their files back.
He packed every one of their files up in boxes, sealed them up with masking tape, and withdrew from every one of their cases. And we never represented them again. Mm-hmm. I mean, that had to have been a financial blow for the firm, but just what an awesome guy that was to support me like that back at a time when, a lot of people wouldn't have done that. I mean,
I think you tell it a very important part of the story as we talk about diversity, and we often hear women talk about, this was hard and this man did this to me and this man did that to me, and they underestimate us and they don't think we're as smart as they are, or they, we're not as good as they are. But all of us are here in part because we are also supported by other men.
Right.
There are men out there who are dogs, right?
Yeah, had I not been supported like that,
let's just be clear. Could we talk a little bit about a queen bee?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, we can. We have queen bees too. So, we can talk about the importance of diversity. We can talk about these instances, which we think in sharing them will help other women not fall into how do I deal with this? Back then, and even still today, in some firms,
99, 98.
Yeah, you don't have a female mentor. You don't have somebody you can go to. This is not something that they teach you in law school.
Right.
How to deal with the guy who pushes you up against a filing cabinet in a law office. Back in 1994 or 1995, whatever,
right.
They don't tell you how to deal with that and how to get out of that situation. And, today I would like to believe that the vast majority of the time, those kinds of things are not happening. But the reality is sometimes now today, what we're dealing with is even more difficult to manage because you can't see it and it's not in your face and they're not doing that kind of stuff. But back to my point, men are supportive of other women in our profession. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of them out there who are. So if you're listening to this as a man and thinking, oh, this is going to be a male bashing session. No, not necessarily.
No.
Because we take a lot of crap from other women too.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I wrote an article about this when I guess you and I were maybe third year after Lincoln Durst started. And, I had little kids, like I think my daughter was one.
She was one when we started in the firm. 2009.
Yeah, and my son was maybe four. And so, and we were both working. My husband and I were both working. My husband was in sales, and so we went through a series of babysitters. And at some point, maybe 3 or 4 years in, my husband and I sat down and said, we've been through babysitters, and we're trying to make all this work. Oh my gosh, my kids are, my son is 16 years old, and we still haven't gotten in the preschool. I was trying to get us on the wait list for. I swear to God. But anyway. We had that conversation and we decided that my husband would be a stay-at-home dad. It's been a very interesting journey to watch him go through a lot of the struggles that women have gone through as stay-at-home moms for years. He got called the manny. They made fun of him. Oh, your life is so lucky. You're so lucky, whatever, all that stuff. And I remember we had a like a parents' lunch after basketball one day, one of the kids, and we're all sitting around the table, and they one of the guys asked my husband shortly after he quit his job, "So, man, what do you do for a living?" And I watched my husband sit there, not prepared to answer that question. His face turns bright red. He barely can swallow his food. And he says, "Oh, well, I'm in between jobs right now." And we got home, or in the car on the way home, I'm like, "Dude, why, just own it. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay that we don't have a traditional family style or whatever traditional, you know, however you want to define it in the traditional way, right, where the husband works and the wife stays at home. But it's okay. This is our choice. It's a decision that we made for our family. And by the way, it has been the best decision, one of the best decisions we've ever made, because my children have had the benefit of their father being there with them, not instead of a babysitter who calls in sick and has a flat tire, whatever, and all the other stuff that comes along with it. They've had that benefit, and I've been given the flexibility and the ability to really put 100% of myself into my work. You know, sometimes
into building the firm. I mean, we were young. The business was young.
Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, you know, I think your point is very well made that if it weren't for the good work and the good people that include men, right, mm-hmm. that, you know, the success story is not fair without including those people who have also been the mentors along the way. But just like everything, good facts, bad facts, there are good men, bad men, right? And so there are some times when that implicit bias creeps over into an unfairness and an equity.
Absolutely. Yeah, whether it's overt or not. You know, I tell everybody about the story when I appeared in court for the first time in Ohio shortly after I'd been licensed. We showed up for some kind of a pretrial conference up there with a judge, and I was the only woman at the pretrial conference, and the judge asked me for my bar card.
Yeah.
And he didn't ask anybody else in that room for a bar card, and I kind of looked around the room, and all these men are looking at me like, "Oh, what's she going to do?" And I said, "Well, are you going to ask all of them for their bar card
right.
too?" Like, okay, you know, if you want to see mine, that's fine. I'll show it to you. But you better be asking all of them, too. And he just smiled. And that was the end of that. He actually never had me pull the card out. Nothing. But he knew he'd been called out, you know? And I'm not sure that he really had thought about it before he asked it. I don't think that was, again, an intentional slam on the only woman in the room. I was very young.
Yeah.
I looked young. You know,
shame on you.
I know. Well, you know, back in the day when we were first doing calendar calls, a lot of lawyers would send their paralegals to calendar call to stand up and answer for them. And so I think that there might have been some legit concern.
that there
was a paralegal in the room and not a lawyer. I don't know, but I still wasn't going to take it. And that's the thing, right? Is there's a way to respond to those things without breaking down and crying.
Without being offended,
without getting angry, turn it around and make it your power.
You know, I have this story, and I'll just say her first name, Betsy. She was She was maybe 3 or 4 years older than me, but she was wearing a pantsuit to court. And again, this is, you know, 97, 98, and had gone in, and the judge said to her, "Miss So-and-so, do you think it's appropriate to be wearing a pantsuit?" Like, called her out in front of the courtroom, and she said, "Well, Your Honor, you are wearing a dress." You know, so that's a good example of what you're talking about. How you can
turn it around,
quit back, right? You can turn it around and maybe make a joke out of it, and make your point very clear without being offended. I mean, it helps to call people out, but in the way that you did it or the way that Betsy handled it.
Most of the time you can handle things relatively professionally.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've had some quite unprofessional situations where with opposing counsel, actually.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about, and I'm remembering really how traumatic that was for you, because it got under your skin, whether you showed it or not. I know you didn't in the courtroom, but...
I had to hide that.
But it was... I mean, I know it wasn't easy for you, so...
It's not.
And if you want to tell that story.
Again, you know, it goes back to, you know, other... I don't know. First of all, you know, for people who are listening who don't know us, I'm a big girl. Like, I'm not... I'm 5 foot. I tell people I'm 5 foot nine. My husband says, you are not. You're 5 foot eight.
Tell people I'm 5'5" and I'm 5'4".
I was like, I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm 5'9". So we're going to stick with that. But I am not a slight person, right? And
you're very tall. You are hard to stand next to in photographs for me. I have to wear really high heels and you have to take your shoes off.
That's right. And then I wear heels. So, I don't ever feel like I'm easily physically intimidated by people. I grew up pretty rough. I went to a very rough inner city high school, so I'm used to kind of navigating my way through what can be difficult physical altercations, either that I'm directly involved in or there's one in front of me and I need to figure out how to get around right. it, you know? So I've never felt like I couldn't handle myself if I got into a bad circumstance. So this situation really did kind of blindside me. And I think it's because I didn't expect it in a courthouse with another lawyer, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think that there's a time and a place where you might expect to be physically confronted, like in the parking lot on the way to your car. So we had started a trial. The trial we thought was going very well for us. The plaintiff's lawyer was having a difficult time in getting evidence in front of the jury. They were not from North Carolina. They were not as familiar with our rules of evidence. Again, know your rules of right. evidence, people. Come on. And they were showing a video of a witness in front of the jury. And we had gone through the transcript ahead of time, just like you always do. You know, you got to go through and pick out what's objectionable. And they're supposed to either edit it out or sometimes they turn the volume down and then turn it back up when you get to the objectionable part. It just depends on the technology that you have and how technologically savvy the other side is. And we got to a part in the video where I thought something was playing that should have been edited out.
Right.
And they had been having a terrible time with the video. Like, it was all chopped up and it just had not gone
well for them. Actually.
And they knew that the trial was not going well for them anyway. And I stood up and I objected and we made them stop the video and they were really mad. And, you know, we went back through the transcript to see if it really had been addressed yeah. before. And it was my error. But I heard something in that moment.
It was an innocent error.
That sounded like it yeah. was objectionable. And so I stopped the proceedings. And he was so mad. And that, you know, when we were done addressing the issue and before we restarted the video, the judge said, why don't we take our afternoon recess?
Right.
And so he comes up to me and asks if he can see me in the conference room at the back of the courtroom. So in our big courthouse in the city where we practice, Charlotte, there are little conference rooms right in between the door to the hallway and the door to the courtroom. And so I step into the conference room, and he literally like comes at me like physically. And he was a big guy. Like, I'm a big girl, but he was a big guy. He was probably 6'4" and is just yelling and screaming at me. And he's blocking the door so I can't get out. And I literally had a moment where I was like, this is just not going to go right. well. I mean,
somebody's getting ready to get assaulted.
Somebody's yeah. getting ready to get hurt. Yeah. And I said, you need to back up. And he backed up, but he put his hand on the door. And I still thought, he's not going to let me out of here. And I said, if you don't let me out of here, I'm going to take this chair. I'm going to throw it through the window. Cause there's
the glass. Yeah. Between that and the courtroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not all of the conference rooms have that. That one had it.
I know exactly which one you're talking about. Yeah.
And he was just, he was kind of stunned that I was like, I took my shoe off and started walking at him.
Beat him with your shoe?
Yes. I was going to do whatever I had to do to get the hell out of the room. I was like, I got to get out of here. But I mean, he was so mad. Like, the level of anger that he had, you could tell he had completely lost touch with where we were and reality and what was going on. And his emotion had taken over. And I needed to get the heck out of that room as expeditiously as I could.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, man, you want to talk about shaking? And I yell at my female lawyers all the time. There is no crying in baseball.
Right.
Tom Hanks's famous line from that movie, that softball movie that he was in with the women's baseball team.
League of Their Own.
Yes. Yeah. You know, there is no crying in baseball. He couldn't understand why Rosie O'Donnell would cry during a baseball game, right? And I feel the same way, particularly as women. You know, that will be viewed in a way, mm-hmm. that is not always going to be in your favor. And I literally went into the bathroom. I was shaking. I was crying. I couldn't believe what had just happened.
Well, it's hard enough to do our jobs, much less to complicate it with that kind of aggression.
Right, right. And so I had another lawyer with me, and that lawyer was pretty insistent that I tell the judge what had happened. Now, the lawyer who had done that to me was not a North Carolina lawyer.
Right.
And I knew the judge well, who we were trying that case in front of, and I knew that if I told him, he'd probably eject him from North Carolina and wouldn't let him finish the trial.
And you didn't want to mistry the case?
I didn't want to mistry the case. Well. We were winning. I knew that one of the reasons he was so mad was because we were winning. And I just literally had to get my shit together and go. Like, no, we're not going to do that. Wow. We are going to head down, keep moving, get this over with, try not to piss him off. And, you know, to the extent that you can do that, I mean, you still have a job to do, right? But, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it happens. I hope not very often. I've not ever heard any other women describe having that kind of interaction. And I do worry, right? Again, I grew up really tough.
Right.
And so I'm not going to be afraid of you. If you're going to come at me like that, I'm going to find a way to get out. But people who didn't grow up like I grew up, who haven't been in fights,
I would have just cried.
Well, see, but what would have happened? What would have happened? Or somebody who's physically much smaller than I am, who might be so horribly intimidated that they freeze in the moment. Like, I don't know what he would have done with somebody like that, which is really, for me, you know,
The scary part. Well, yeah. I think it's interesting that in a situation like that, you chose your loyalty and dedication to the client, right, over really your own situation. And I think that's just shows a lot of thoughtfulness in, okay, what are my risks and benefits, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
what are you doing?
If I tell
them, why are you doing it? What are the consequences?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And thinking through and having a clear enough head to think through the situation to say, well, this is, you know, what I want to do, but here's what in this situation, right? Because it depends. In this situation, the better part of valor is to stick this one out so that I can achieve the success that I need to achieve for my client, even if it's at your own sacrifice. So, I mean, I don't know. I've definitely never had that happen to me, but I've had other lawyers be very, very angry. And, you know, I got to tell you, again, the physical thing is different. But when another lawyer really, like, just starts slobbering and cussing and getting angry at me, I feel empowered.
And don't you feel like you must be doing something right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You sure are angry. I'm sorry. You know? And honestly, it's like, it's the bully on the playground. And when I talk to my witnesses, I tell them this, you know, how do you avoid the bully on the playground? You ignore them. What do they want? They want to elicit a response from you. And when you just say, I'm sorry, you're so angry. If you need to take a moment, please do.
I have to tell you, because I don't think I've told you this story just literally in the last 2 weeks. You know, again, we're doing this recording. We're in COVID land. So some of the things that we're doing by Zoom or web conference or Microsoft Teams or whatever it is. And we were taking a deposition. I was taking a deposition. And there's a very high profile lawyer on the other side from me in this case. And he doesn't much care for people telling him how things are going to get done.
Right.
And we're in the deposition and he's trying to tell me what I needed to do with an exhibit. And I said, excuse me, my deposition.
I'll decide.
I'll decide how I'm going to handle my exhibits. You know, if you want to ask me to do something, and then maybe I'll try and remember to do that. But otherwise, no, that's not how this is going to work.
Right.
And we get to a break. And sometimes the mute button is your friend and it should be used. And he did not mute himself and literally started cussing me out.
What did he say?
He called me an effing a-hole. And I was literally on my cell phone with one of the other lawyers who was attending the deposition to say, hey, I think this is going well. We need to tweak this. We need to do that. And I could hear him. And I said, you're going to need to hold on a second. And I said, excuse me.
Next time you want to cuss
me. Thanks so much for the kind words. But you're not muted. And he turned so red.
And you could even see it on Zoom.
I could still see him too because he hadn't turned his camera off. So again, you know, life lessons. Who would have known, you know, that we would be conducting so much business this way these days? But don't forget at every break to mute yourself and to turn your camera off. It's really not that hard. But yeah, it happens. And again, my feeling coming out of that was I must be doing something right.
Right. If he's that angry with you. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And then the whole, you know, the interruptions and the bullying that you see in the depositions by largely older male lawyers. I just have to say that because it's the truth. In fact, I've never had that. Trying to think back through where it's been just a really nasty deposition situation with a female lawyer on the other side. Honestly, I really haven't. Not that I can think of. But no, like the interruptions, you know, and all that. I think there was one not long ago, and I must have picked this up from somewhere because I don't think I'm smart enough to come up with this on my own. But I kept getting interrupted, and I said to him, I'm sorry, but I think the middle of my sentence must have interrupted the beginning of yours. But again, the point is the calmer, thank you for the kind words, but the calmer approach I think is just a lot more effective in calling people out and doing it with either humor or
a little bit of grace.
Grace, right. Mm-hmm. Without backing down, you know?
So. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I could go on and on now that I start thinking about them.
Well, I guess we can decide.
Guy who invited me outside at a deposition, I thought that was good. And I don't think he knew it. I mean, literally, he was so mad at me during this deposition. He said, do we need to take this outside? And again, he didn't know me from Adam. It was the first case we'd ever had together. And he didn't know anything about my background, nothing. I was like, sure, let's go. And I stood up. He had no idea what to do. No idea. Like, he really thought that I would just back down and not do my job. I don't know what he was thinking. What I was thinking was, he's pretty big. I can at least outrun him. That's what I was thinking. But I'm not going to let somebody challenge me like that and not stand up to it.
I'm sitting
here
trying to think what I would do because I couldn't outrun him and I certainly couldn't beat him up. I just YouTube his butt.
Turn your phone on. That's what you always say. I'm going to put you on FaceTime Live.
Well, you know, that was my tantrum control for my 2-year-old daughter. I just started videoing her every time she threw a tantrum and quit. It's the only thing that worked. So anyway, that's my defense now. I'm going to put you on video. I'm going to Facebook you.
Not only do we have lawyer tips, we have mommy tips.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, they cross paths.
Videotape them. Or what we did is she'd start throwing a temper tantrum and then we'd just walk out of the room.
Ignore.
And go to a different room. And she'd come and follow you. Throw herself back on the floor at your feet in the other room. Go to the other room.
That's right.
By the time you got to about the fourth room, she was done. Right. She's tired.
Well, and it's funny because it's almost like lessons you learn from being a parent of a toddler also work in the courtroom. Yes. I'm serious. If you ignore them, they'll stop. If you don't react to them, they quit. If you come up with a creative means of managing it, it stops. But having the tantrum doesn't work.
That's right.
You know? So
on either end.
No.
Right?
That's true.
Mean, that's why we don't have the tantrum when they're calling us the court reporter. That's why we don't, you know, I mean, it's just not an effective strategy the vast majority of the time.
Yep.
Now when you gotta be mean and you gotta be mad and you gotta have your blowout, do it strategically and make the decision that's what you need to do.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I think women can still do that and be pretty effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but you gotta choose your moment.
Absolutely.
Okay. So lessons learned about being women in the courtroom.
Okay. So closing arguments. Wow. If you let them, they will. Right? Don't let them. They can choose to act however they want, but your reaction is exclusively yours. And, you know, the classy approach to it is way more effective than the tantrum.
And absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why we're kind of like unicorns in this profession,
right,
is because a lot of women get intimidated by all of this early on. And that's because they don't have anybody to talk to about it. They're not hearing these kinds of stories in the survival of some of us through these stories, right? And how you can manage it and how you can deal with it. And, you know, the more of us there are doing this and the more of us who are willing to share these stories, the hope is that that will give more and more women the strength and the power to move forward in their own career and to stick with it and to go through it and to come out on the other side, you know? I say that, although we still run into these things every once in a while.
Yeah, but we know how to manage them now, and the confidence that we've gained over the experiences that we've had, and hopefully we give confidence to other women that are coming through that are having these experiences and how to handle them. I mean, that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
Paying it forward.
And I would imagine that we will have an episode at some point in the future about why are we not seeing more women moving forward?
Right.
What is that measure? What is important?
Heather.
Oh yeah. We have some great lawyers in our firm who have a lot of insights into that. And we've got a lot of great lawyers who've practiced in a lot of different environments. I mean, we've both practiced in kind of mid-sized firms, big firms, now smaller firm.
Becoming
although
mid-size.
We're now mid-size. Yeah. We've hit the magic number. Double digits.
That's awesome.
Of lawyers. But I do think that, you know, at some point we'll have an episode that just talks about all of that, because it's a really important topic to me. We really do, in everything that we do, I think, make an effort to lift up other women in the profession.
Yeah.
And whether they're in our firm, whether they're, you know, somebody that we see at a calendar call or at a motions session where they've made an argument and the court asks them to go and get something or bring something back. And I'll very frequently lean over and be like, hey, I know exactly which case you need for that, you know, just to give them a lift up. Right. And say, hey, you're going to win that if you go to this, you know?
Right.
So yeah.
Strength in numbers.
Strength in numbers.
Yeah. So then the verdict.
Yeah.
So you're our jury. And we hope you'll rate us and give us some feedback so we know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And
ask some
always,
questions.
Yeah, we want questions. Those make it more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Download us.
Till then.